unfinished.
The world will never forget. Make the call.
Count up!
Technically, we don't exist. We answer to no one. And when all else fails, we don't.
What did you say your unit was called?
I didn't.
Welcome to this Rise of Cobra special edition of What's On Joe Mine. We're a weekly fan cast about the world of G.I. Joe. I'm Gary. Joining me as always is our show writer, Greg. Greg, hello.
Hey, Gary.
He's the admin of GeneralJoes.com, contributor to the G.I. Joe Collectors Club newsletter. Everyone say hi to Justin. Justin, hello.
How you doing, Gary? What's going on?
Doing good, doing good. He is the syndicated columnist at InsidePulse.com and internet video toy reviewer. Everyone please say hi to Chuck. Chuck, how are we?
Howard.
Chuck just went Cylon on us.
We're off to a good start.
Oh, that's excellent. Chuck, do you want to repeat yourself, or you just want to come out as a Cylon?
I live to serve. I serve to live.
Okay, then that's...
I thought that was his Transformers voice.
That's right, because that one sound reminisced like an old-school Cylon? But anyways, we're not here to talk about that. Well, guys, the timing could not have been any more perfect, really, on this recording. With the new Retaliation trailer dropping recently, it's inevitable that we kind of begin to compare, and we touched on it a little bit in one of our previous episodes, of what was it like compared to the Rise of Cobra. So the lead-off question tonight, and starting with you, Greg, going around the horn, is, was the Rise of Cobra really that bad?
I don't think it was as bad as people claim it was. It's not a great movie by any stretch, in my opinion, but it's also not an unwatchable mess, as some people refer to it as, in my opinion, of course. Justin, what about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I'll second that. It doesn't hold up. I'll give it that much. I mean, I know, when I first saw it, I kind of got caught up in the hype, and I know later on in the episode we're going to talk about whether or not how we saw the episode how we saw the movie kind of shaped our opinions of it. But yeah, I'm pretty much in Greg's camp. It doesn't hold up. I've seen it probably more times than I care to admit, just because it's a G.I. Joe movie and I'm a crazy fanboy like that. I've probably seen it 8 or 9 times, but it really doesn't hold up. After a few showings, you see the weakness in plot. It's really not that great. Channing Tatum's not a very good actor. I can sit through it and be entertained still, like I was, going on almost 3 years ago or just over 2 years ago. It's not as bad as people say. It's not the end of days as far as G.I. Joe goes. It's got a lot of the same campy style of humor, pseudo action, pseudo science fiction that Sumbo always did. So I don't see the huge grand flaws in it, but yeah, it doesn't really hold up over time, and it's certainly got its share of faults.
Yeah, I've always said that Rise of Cobra is not as bad as people make it out to be. But then again, I'm just looking at it as a straight-ahead action movie and not this event that was, at the time, 26, 27 years in the making.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing. So many Joe fans were just, we'd never had a live-action movie before, and we're anticipating something grand and wonderful, and the timing was not right. Just between what was going on with the writer's strike and things of that nature, it was not a good time for that movie to hit. And like I said, we'll get into more detail further on in the episode. There's a bunch of reasons why it wasn't as good as it could have been. They're not all one person or one element's fault. It just kind of was an unfortunate confluence of circumstances. But yeah, it's waiting 25 years for that was kind of unfortunate.
Now, for me, it really wasn't that bad. I see where people are coming from, that it was disappointing to them because it really wasn't their G.I. Joe. I've met a couple people in the hobby since then. This was their jumping on point. So this is kind of how they see G.I. Joe. And that's cool. Okay, we brought some new people into the hobby through the movie, even though that the movie might not have been up to really the diehard collectors or longtime fan standards. I will say that, Justin, you actually went to a premiere night. I went to the main premiere in Indianapolis, and I'm sitting next to Katie, and when Snake Eyes jumped out of the howler, the hero go, Snake Eyes!
Yeah.
There's certain parts that warm the heart, and that was one of them. So I'm willing to, because I was able to share a moment like that with my child, I'm willing to forgive awful lot with this particular movie. And as Chuck said, it was an action movie. You knew going in that it wasn't going to be winning any Oscars, so you look at it as a summer popcorn movie, and for what it was, it really wasn't that bad.
And there are sequences in it that really kind of brought you into the whole G.I. Joe world, like that initial kind of ambush by the Cobra gunship was very well done, very cool. That whole battle in the pit was very well well done and very cool. There's a lot of pretty hard-edged action. People getting their heads impaled by crossbows. I mean, like Covergirl getting killed. I mean, there were some really cool elements to the movie. It just is unfortunately built upon a really kind of shaky foundation, a really bizarre kind of triangle between Cobra Commander, the Baroness, and Duke, and whatever. That was pretty unfortunate. But there were some parts of it that really brought, and kind of brought a smile to my face and made it really fun to watch. And then there's just other parts that kind of brought you back down to earth.
Well, there you go, Greg. The wheels are greased. We're ready to do this.
Keep it rolling.
Yeah.
So we actually got a letter from Mike.
You've got mail.
Been a listener of the program.
It's not spam.
That's basically what got us starting about it, and that's why we decided to do this episode, pretty much. So Mike writes in and says, all the news of the upcoming G.I. Joe Retaliation inspired me to rewatch Rise of Cobra for the first time since I saw it in theaters. First time around, I was pretty disappointed, but the second viewing a few years later was pretty forgiving to the flaws and was pretty entertained. I think that in Sunbow had animated Rise of Cobra back in 1985, I would have been the happiest Joe fan in the world. So I ask you all, has anyone changed the original opinions on the film 2 years later? Has anyone never gone back to rewatch it? Mike. I mean, we all decided to rewatch it again just to refresh ourselves for this podcast. I've probably seen it about 6 times or so. I saw it twice in the theater, which I really don't know why I went back that second time. But
supporting the brand, Greg. Supporting the brand.
Yeah, basically what it boils down to. I mean, when I first saw it, I enjoyed it because I knew it was G.I. Joe. But if I'd went to it and it hadn't been branded with G.I. Joe, if this was just action movie A or like The Expendables or something like that, I don't know if I would have enjoyed it as much, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I know there were some things that I really like and I still like even when I watch it again. There's the first, like Justin mentioned, the ambush scene when we first see the G.I. Joe team. Snake Eyes comes flying out of the howler and Heavy Duty's rolling on the minigun. That scene's awesome. Like that one just gets you pumped up. And I really like Heavy Duty and Breaker for the Joe. I think those both did a really good job with their characters. They were distinct and funny, and I thought they were probably the best out of all of them.
Yep.
Like you had mentioned, the gratuitous violence with the heads exploding with the crossbows and someone getting impaled with a forklift and...
Oh, yeah.
Grenade shoved down one's neck, yeah.
Yeah. That always makes for a good time. And like, the shooting and the fighting montages, all of them are awesome. I don't know. It's a good PG-13 fight movie, in my opinion. I think on the Cobra side, I really liked Zartan, even though he's not the traditional Zartan.
Mm-hmm.
I think Arnold Vosloo does a good job making him kind of a scummy person, which is fun to watch. And I was really a big fan of Storm Shadow as well. I thought that he did a pretty good job with the part, even though he didn't have a whole lot to work with, because basically you're fighting someone that doesn't talk back.
Yeah.
Makes it a little difficult for scenes and to monologue, but I like Storm Shadow. Especially the whole the chase through Paris where Baroness mm-hmm. goes, he gave up, and he goes, he never gives up.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, and there's bad parts, too. It's an issue with, it was the same in Renegades, where they don't do a good job explaining code names. And, mm-hmm. like, they just, all of a sudden, everyone calls Duke. They don't call him his normal name, even from the beginning of the movie. Even in the flashback, they call him Duke.
Like, even his fiancée calls, it's like, they're getting engaged, some deep romantic moment, and she calls him Duke.
Yeah.
Just pulls you right out of it. And the whole, I think it was explained in the novelization. I don't know if any of you guys have read that or not, but they don't actually explain Storm Shadow not killing the Hard Master. I thought right. I read somewhere that they explain it in the novelization, or they bring it up in the actual script and it was cut out of the movie, which that doesn't, I mean, you can't do that. You can't just, unless they're going to touch upon it in Retaliation, that just seems weird.
It's Hollywood. They can do anything they want.
Without any guarantee of a sequel, then that was kind of a really awkward way to put that, because the key was, I think at the end, there was supposed to be when Snake Eyes kind of stabs Storm Shadow in the stomach with the sword and they kind of come close together before he goes falling in the water. In one version of the film, Storm Shadow speaks and says, I didn't kill him or something, or I didn't kill the Hard Master or something like that before he drops in the water. But I guess at some early screenings, people didn't like that. They didn't like that the G.I. Joe killed a guy that was now not a villain after all. So they kind of pulled that out and kind of left it on the cutting room floor but I do, something tells me they're going to touch on that in Retaliation. From what I've heard and what I understand, Retaliation is kind of explores Snake Eyes' backstory a little bit more and how he ties into the Arashigaki clan and Storm Shadow and such. So maybe we'll hear more then.
in the director's commentary, because when I rewatched the movie, I watched it with the director's commentary. They actually explained that scene. The line was, Storm Shadow was going to say to him, it was not I who killed our master. And that's actually why when you see Snake Eyes fall to the ground, his body language is like very remorseful.
Right.
They felt that with fans not understanding the history of the character, the history of the Snake Eyes Storm Shadow relationship, that, as you said, Justin, an audience would view it as, well, Snake Eyes just killed someone who's not really a bad guy.
Right.
You know, why would he kill that one? Now, to be honest with you, the fact that he didn't kill the Hard Master, I don't think makes him any less of a villain.
I know. He's still like, you know, killed security guards throwing stars and blew up the Eiffel Tower and stuff. I mean, that's kind of...
Yeah, and it was interesting that, and they said that, like, if they had the opportunity to make a sequel in a flashback to that, they would put the line in, because then they would be able to explore it.
Right. Makes sense. Yeah, and I think Greg brought up some really good points when he was kind of talking about the overall film. I mean, first of all, I guess to compare how I feel about it now to how I felt about it then, I kind of have to say where I started from with Rise of Cobra. I have a soft spot in my heart for the Rise of Cobra for a number of different reasons. I mean, number one, that was kind of when my current rendition of my website came into being, was kind of leading up to the Rise of Cobra. I converted it from a normal, pretty much, website to a more blog-style, freeform, news-style site. And I felt like, you know, the site kind of gained a little bit of legitimacy there. You know, I was actually dealing with official press representatives from Paramount, from Hasbro. I felt like I was...
You felt important.
Yeah, I kind of did. Yeah, I felt like a part of the hobby. I felt like, like I was leading a site and kind of helping promote the brand a little bit more than I had in the past. And so I have a soft spot. You know, that's kind of where this new site got its start, was leading up to the Rise of Cobra. And I had an opportunity when the movie came out to go down to Warwick, Rhode Island, and see a charity screening event where you donated a certain amount of money to Hasbro's Children's Hospital, and you got to get an early screening of the movie, which I went down to. You know, there's a bunch of forum guys there. You know, Fran from Histank was there. Guy Bryan, who goes by Red Sox on the board, was there. Hung out with him a little bit. And you're just walking in the lobby to see a movie, and you're elbow to elbow with Stephen Sommers, and, you know, Rachel Nichols is about 10 feet away. And it was just a really cool, great environment. I mean, I'm sitting there chit-chatting with somebody. I heard him mention something about the Tuck School of Business, and I live in Enfield, New Hampshire, which is right next to Dartmouth, which is where Tuck School is based out of. So I said, oh, you know, Tuck School, you know, whatever, kind of started talking back and forth. Turns out the guy is, you know, vice president of marketing for G.I. Joe, and he was talking about the Tuck School, because him and Brian Goldner, who is the Hasbro CEO, Brian Goldner is a graduate of Dartmouth, and so they go up there all the time to talk, and I'm like, wow, I just had this, you know, 20-minute conversation about my hometown with a guy who's this global marketing director for G.I. Joe. It's pretty cool. You know, it's kind of a cool feeling. And it was a great environment. Everybody was pumped up. You had donated, not a whole lot of money to the charity. It was about $75, I think, was the amount that you had to donate. So it wasn't unsurmountable. But you could tell people who were there donating, it was a mixture. It was either hardcore fanboys like me, like Fran, like a bunch of other forum guys that were there, or it was kind of rich people who were there to support the charity, not necessarily because it was a G.I. Joe movie. But, you know, I ended up sitting in a group of fans, and fans who were there spending $75 to see the movie before everybody else are going to be diehards. So it was really awesome. I mean, there was really some sequences throughout the movie, you know, like you said, where Snake Eyes jumps out of the howler and everybody was kind of like, yeah, you know, everybody around you was all getting into it. It was just a really cool feeling, a really great environment. You felt good by helping this charity. You were surrounded by cool people. Like I said, Rachel was there, you know, Brian Goldner was there, Stephen Sommers was there. It was just a really good feeling. And you walked out of that theater after seeing the movie saying, like, wow, that was awesome. That was really awesome. And so I can't help but, you know, 2 years later, you know, last week when I popped the movie in the Blu-ray player again to check it out, you know, compared to that original experience, it doesn't live up. And, you know, you think back and you think, you know, all the storyline plot faults, the whole brainwashing thing, the whole Baroness turns good at the end thing. The fact that to kind of, and kind of spins into retaliation, because the fact that the way they kind of contorted that first story to fit that one movie almost ruins it for the entire G.I. Joe universe, because now the Baroness is good. So what the hell do you do with the Baroness from now on? Does she not get to appear in any more movies because now she's a good guy and you can't figure out how to make her a Cobra again? How do they fix Destro, who, you know, is this kind of weird executive guy with this really contorted, bizarre metal mask and, now he can't appear again. You got a character like Marlon Wayans playing Ripcord. Oh, well, nobody seemed to like him, so now we can't use Ripcord anymore. Or Scarlet. We don't want to reference his first movie, so now we can't use Scarlet anymore. So all of a sudden, there's these main characters, because of how they were written and how they were designed in the first movie, are now kind of off limits throughout the rest of the movies. And that's kind of really impacted how I'm looking back at The Rise of Cobra now. Because I just think about how cool Retaliation could be if, you know, Rachel Nichols as Scarlet was part of it, because I thought she was a fine part of the first movie. She wasn't one of the detractors from the
first. I agree to that, yeah.
Yeah. So, yep. I mean, it just seems like there's some lost opportunities in Retaliation because of what they did with these characters in The Rise of Cobra, and that has soured me a little bit, you know, looking back on The Rise of Cobra. And, you know, you got to admit, you see that 2.5-minute trailer for Retaliation, and it just makes you think, Rise of Cobra, what? This is what they could have done, and this is what we got, and it just, unfortunately, kind of shines a much brighter light on what we did get in 2009, and the light isn't necessarily very flattering. It's a tough call. I think it's got its great merits. I can sit down, I can watch it, I can enjoy it. It's still a G.I. Joe movie. You know, I still geek out at certain parts of it, but I definitely, now compared to when I saw it in 2009, I definitely don't think of it as highly as I did back then. And, you know, it has lost some of its luster.
The funny thing about this movie is, because, you know, and it's funny, like, watching it again and listening to the commentary, it did, you know, some of the things I liked in the first movie, I still liked. Some of the things I liked in the first movie, I actually didn't like. And then some of the things I didn't like, I actually appreciated what they were trying to do, and I can actually see it now for what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's that whole little shuffle there.
Yeah, and it helps to kind of have a little bit of perspective on why they might do something and the whole reasons behind it. I mean, I can go for that. I don't know. I really didn't like that whole Baroness, Duke, Cobra Commander triangle. It just felt really forced.
Yeah, I didn't like it either.
But I could tell that. So, I mean, I don't know. It's just...
And the funny thing is, too, I know you guys just mentioned it, but it wasn't until this second viewing that I noticed that suit had lips. I don't know what happened the first time, what I was doing, maybe just because...
You were probably still on the Transformer boards at the time, because it was a huge deal with all the fanboys. Oh, yes. Oh my God, that he had lips.
It's so out of control that, like, Rhett Reese, the guy who's the screenwriter for G.I. Joe Retaliation,
yeah.
he appeared on Twitter, or we kind of discovered him on Twitter, and the first question that somebody asked him was... Does Snake Eyes have lips? That was the first question somebody could think of to ask him when he appeared on Twitter. So, and that's how much of a big deal Snake Eyes lips
thing is. What happened was, is that when I was watching it the first time, I had been so numb from all the postings, all the complaints about his lips, that my mind just blanked it out and didn't allow me to see it. You know, so I'm glad we're not getting lips this time.
Oh,
the complaining would never end.
The complaining won't anyway, so.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
For me, because everyone kind of hit all the points of where the weak spots were. All I have to say is every time that I went to the movie, opening night here in Indianapolis, I went to the Indianapolis premiere, like I said, the place was packed. I forget, some radio station was putting it on. I happened to get tickets. They're asking like a bunch of trivia questions before the movie, and I was nailing all of them and finally said, you know, can anyone else answer a question that's not a Monaco Joe? And I'm like, oh, okay, this excludes me. But that was a fun night. And I was there with the family, and then later that night, I met up with Jay and some other guys, local guys, to see the midnight screening. Third time I saw it, I was actually at Joe Con with all my buddies. Every time that I saw the movie in the theater, and I saw it three times in the theater, it was always, I have good memories.
Always gonna be the one upper.
No, it was always good memories that I had. That was good times. People around you that you're comfortable with, that you consider your good friends. So that always helps the movie going experience. The acting aside, again, I knew what I was getting into. It was a summer popcorn movie, and I wasn't expecting any Oscars to be handed out to this thing. How much cooler was an intro of that Cobra gunship, though?
Oh, yeah.
That was, I think, severely understated. When that first thing first came on the screen, you're like, whoa.
Yeah. And that's the kind of impact Cobra should have.
It just flattens two Apache helicopters. I mean, and that whole desert forest ambush or whatever they want to call it, that was a great opening scene. The whole underwater aspect that toward the end kind of dulled it for a lot of people because, I guess subs fighting each other wasn't nearly as exciting as maybe ground combat or something up in the air. Actually, the Paris pursuit portion with the power suits wasn't that bad. And hey, who doesn't like to see the French get picked on every now and then by toppling over the Eiffel Tower? I mean, and that's saying from someone who's been there. But Jonathan Pryce as the President of the United States was an interesting casting, because I always saw him as a bad guy because he was a bad guy in a Bond film, and he was also kind of this wacky, absent-minded father governor guy on Pirates of the Caribbean, so I never really considered him as president, as president of the United States material. So that was kind of weird. I will say the role played by General Hawk, well, it really wasn't that bad, but he only had a couple scenes, so he was the biggest name, so it's no big deal there. Tatum was horrible, like you said. Wayne's for Ripcord wasn't bad, but you know, he was obviously the comedy, and the comedy kind of not hit on all cylinders there. I will agree that Scarlett was casted well, and I would wish that maybe we could see her in the new movie along with actually Heavy Duty and Breaker. I wish they would carry them over to the new movie, but alas, they're not going to be there. But beyond that, every time I went, I just generally had a positive experience, because I think it was just sharing the experience with other people. Again, seeing it with your family on Blu-ray, again, you remember the time where you're in the theater. Katie got a chance at JoeCon to actually meet Heavy Duty, the guy that played Heavy Duty, and that there's a good memory there. So for me, just from a different point of view, it really, really wasn't that bad all around, really.
A very good point, kind of the memories aspect of it, because, you know, as I said, you know, I had the good memory of the premiere night for that first night, and that's probably the biggest reason why I'm hoping they actually screen Retaliation at JoeCon, because I think seeing G.I. Joe Retaliation in a crowd with a bunch of Joe fans will be amazing, and that is almost the top reason why I want to make it to JoeCon this year, is to be able to sit in the theater with a bunch of new Yahoos or Yehoos or whatever. I don't know how you pronounce it. Greg knows.
Yahoos.
Yahoos. Sit around with a bunch of Yahoos and watch Yahoos Retaliation and just soak in.
Crazy Joe fans. How about that?
Like Gary said, I shrieked like a little girl during that 4-minute
resolute. There we go. Yeah.
Too many REs for crying out loud. Yeah, I shrieked like a little girl during that Resolute clip that was only 4 minutes long. I mean, geez, this could be 2 hours of street shrieking if everything goes right. Which, of course, is like another Saturday night at JoeCon. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So let's talk on to what I think is my favorite part.
One more thing about the movie. I'm just kidding.
My favorite part of Rise of Cobra would be the figures and the vehicle.
Yay!
I think the first couple waves, people were a little bit concerned because the quality of the figures and the character selection wasn't that good. But they really started hitting their stride in like wave 3 and 4. And we started getting some better articulation. And generally, I think Rise of Cobra, the Cobra side isn't that great, but I think the Joe side is pretty well done.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. I think a lot of people get caught up in how they didn't like the movie, and that kind of rolls over into the toy line, and which is really unfortunate, because without the Rise of Cobra toy line, I don't think we'd have the Pursuit of Cobra toy line that we do, which led into the 30th anniversary. So I think people owe a lot of thanks to what Rise of Cobra did for action figure engineering and design and things of that nature.
And like I said, with the movie, the toys themselves weren't that bad. I mean, there were some toys that...
Some of them were downright awesome.
Yes, they were down beyond awesome. I mean, the fact that we got as many new vehicles as we did is great. Now, I can understand that, you know, we've had our fill of Neo Vipers and the Rainbow of Colors. I'm down with that. And then the different, you know, have a Neo Viper Elite, and then, you know, all of a sudden you have Elite Vipers, and then you have Eels, and after a while, army buildings is like, crap. Just, no, I'm not getting 10 of each. It's 5 of each now. It's too many. But it really, the toys weren't that bad. And Justin has said they sold pretty well, just not as well as Hasbro hoped they would.
Right. Yeah, numbers-wise, if you just stood back and look at the numbers-wise, they sold quite well. The issue was expectations, and they kind of based it, you know, when Transformers came out in 2007, they under-marketed and under-ordered the toy line, and it sold out really quickly. And for a while there, I don't know if you guys remember, you couldn't find Transformers the movie toys on retail shelves. They were just gone. And so Hasbro was like, oh, we're not making that mistake again, so let's pump up production and let's just flood retail with these toys. And then, you know, unfortunately, it didn't meet those expectations.
So we went around and picked 5 figures. There's a little bit of overlap between some of us, but the good thing is pretty much
speak
everyone
for yourselves.
Well, except for you.
I specifically picked 5 figures that nobody else picked.
And that's a good thing. Like I saw your list of five figures,
good,
and no one else picked
one,
them.
Yeah.
And they were ones that I would have picked if we had to keep on going to 10 or 15 figures. Yep. I mean, there's some good ones. So I'll just list off mine. Shipwreck, I was a big fan of. I think he's a nice modern update for Shipwreck.
Now, which one are you talking? The reactive armor Shipwreck or the Toys R Us?
Oh, yes, the reactive armor. Sorry.
I agree that he's awesome.
Next up is Flash, which I liked his design. And as Gary has mentioned before, he came from the Rise of Cobra video game, but I thought he was a nice update to Flash as well, even though I'm not a big fan of the whole masked head. Night Adder, I thought that was a nice reuse of the Resolute Roadblock body, and then the tattoos were a nice thing. Usually, I think that was probably one of the first figures that had tattoos that significantly on the figure, so that was kind of cool to see. City Strike, Snake Eyes, I mean, that figure's just awesome, even though it's technically Resolute, but it came out underneath the Rise of Cobra heading, so it's kind of a cheat, but that's okay. And then I was actually a pretty big fan of the Elite Viper when that first came out. It was probably my favorite of the Cobra troop builders. Mm-hmm. It's my like for it's kind of faded since then, but it was the best Cobra troop builder from Rise of Cobra, in my opinion.
I can agree with those. Those are all good choices. And, of course, I just bragged that I didn't have any overlap until I just realized that you actually had Flash on your list, and he's on my list, too. So, damn it, now I have to pick somebody else. One thing that I kind of thought was really interesting about this, we had kind of discussion on a little private forum back and forth about which five we were going to pick. And, you know, Gary and Greg, you know, being the uber forum junkies that they are, got their lists in before me. And I'm like, oh, man, they just took
two
of the best
figures. Sometimes.
Like, how am I going to pick five figures that they didn't pick? And so then I just kind of thought about it, and I surprisingly pretty easily came up with other figures that weren't on their list, I guess, besides Flash. So I was happy with that. So basically, the figures on my list, first and foremost, was Rollbar, who is one of the guys that came with the Snarler motorcycle. He's that airborne repaint and really cool urban camouflage. I love that figure. I've got like six or seven of them. Just, I think they make really cool army builders to go alongside the Pit Commandos. Very cool figure. The single pack General Hawk, I like a lot. Came with a jetpack.
Yeah, that was a good one.
A t-shirt. Just really simple sculpt, really good detail, really, really well articulated. That awesome jetpack, that great G36 machine gun, the pistol that fit in his holster and everything. That was just a really fantastic figure. I thought a little outside the box, and Rex the Dr. Lewis is actually a figure that I thought was really good. He's a character that's kind of maligned in the film because, you know, he obviously becomes Cobra Commander and nobody's really that happy about that. But I think the way they did the figure was really cool. He had some really interesting designs.
And he was a chase figure too.
Right. And I love the way his hair kind of came off, and you could do the regular Rex and then like kind of the burned Rex. You could take his collar off and his hair off, and he kind of became that little burn victim type of character. Those cool big metal claws, and came with those test tubes of material or whatever they were. So he was actually a really cool figure for being a character that people didn't like a whole lot. Another guy that's actually on my list was the Accelerator Suit Duke, and I know the
Accelerator Suit.
People hate those things, but figure was really well done. Very cool layered armor, really nice paint apps, kind of bulky but still well articulated, and he could really move. He could be well posed. It really went well. I thought it was a great figure, in spite of the fact that people really hate the Accelerator Suits. And because I couldn't choose Sergeant Flash, I went with one of my runners-up, and I went with Arctic Storm Shadow, which was a figure that I think was kind of overlooked. He was that guy in one of those later waves, you know, bare-chested with the scars, had those kind of those gauntlets that are now being used for the Pursuit of Cobra.
There's a couple different variants of that one in there.
Yeah, there are. There are some, like...
There's three variants of that one. One without a mask, one with a mask, and one with the Arashikage tattoo, and one without the Arashikage tattoo. I'd have to go back and look into that. But guess what, you variant chasers, if you missed that... Go back and look.
And the reason I like the figure is because he represents, he looks a lot like what Storm Shadow looked like in that final battle with Snake Eyes in the base at the Polar Ice Caps. He's very well articulated. Again, I must have a thing for jetpacks because he comes with like some crazy stiletto. They called it like a stiletto pack or something that comes with backpack swords, but I kind of used it as a jetpack. It's just a really cool, really basic figure that I just happen to like a lot. So he's also in my top five.
Okay, my set of five. Number one. City Strike Snake Eyes. I think everything that's been said to him, you know, goes double for me. That was one of the things I like about Rise of Cobra. I finally had a Snake Eyes who could hold his sword well. Number two, Flash. But what really got me about this figure was instead of having him with the tube to connect the laser to his backpack, he had this like little cup system with a string that, you know, he could attach it to all, you know, to his giant laser gun, the giant rocket launcher, and I just thought that was cool. Reactive armor Scarlet.
Good choice.
I mean, that crossbow, the fact that it can not only disassemble, but then attach to that holster. I mean, that was really the best crossbow I think we've gotten thus far in the G.I. Joe line. And I'm surprised they didn't use it for, like, Renegade Scarlet or something like
that. Well, her add-on to the spring-activated thing that came with all those figures, she could repel with that. That was also cool.
Kind of. Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I actually would have loved to have seen, like, a role-play toy of her crossbow that could have...
I'm about to say, I'm glad you covered it up by saying of her crossbow.
Yeah. Well, no, just, you know, with that, like, working... video camera playback targeting system, that would have been cool. The Pit Commando, that was really the first time we had a single carded G.I. Joe troop builder that was at mass retail, and plethora of accessories, I mean, insane. And then finally, the Elite Viper. I think, you know, by the time this guy came out, everyone had basically written off the Cobra Vipers as pieces of crap. And then this guy was like, yeah, wait a minute. There are actually decent Cobra troop builders in this movie line.
Yep.
And for an honorable mention, I have to do the Toys R Us exclusive Firefly.
Oh, man. Shame on me for forgetting Firefly. Yeah, he's one of the best, definitely.
Gary, what about you? What are your top five?
My five, starting at top going down, Helix. I like the fact that it's a new original character, again, from the video game. I don't know what Hasbro means by female figures not selling, because I saw these selling all over the place, and I never really saw them peg-warming. So this was a good character. Again, City Strike Snake Eyes, what everyone else has said is true. Kamakura, that was a late wave release and still kind of hard to find to this day. He had the reactive armor upper, but he was still kind of a ninja type thing. I really like that. The James McClellan, this is James McClellan in the suit that came in the San Diego Comic-Con set that had the vat chrome metal head that you could do a head swap. I really like that one. And then coming in at fifth is Bench Press, a Toys R Us exclusive. You can call him an unofficial homage to Sergeant Slaughter, or you want to call him Rock and Roll or whatever. I thought the figure was a pretty good figure. And then also honorable mentions to Jungle, Assault, Ripcord, and City Strike Duke.
Yes, and again, there's so many figures in those lists that would have made my top five if I'd been a little quicker on the draw. Figures like Helix and City Strike Snake Eyes and the Toys R Us Firefly and Elite Viper, those are all guys that are right at the top of my list too. Well deserved of every bit of props that they get.
Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of other ones that just I was looking through the list on YoJo, like Sergeant Stone or the Paraviper that was like the repaint from the 25th.
Oh, yeah. All the coolness of the 25th anniversary Paraviper and much better colors. I mean,
Desert Viper was actually a pretty decent later release.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I think there's some people that don't like it because a lot of the figures basically were black or grayish in color, and so they don't stand out as much on the shelf. But there's really good molds, and the articulation that we got in Rise of Cobra just blows 25th out of the water. Like some of the figures, especially the reactive armor figures, I think those are some of the most articulated, movable figures that we've probably ever gotten.
Well, not just that, you had the wear on the armor that they tooled in as well. Not tooled it in, but paint apped in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's they really don't get enough credit, and it's unfortunate because some of those Rise of Cobra figures are so cool. It was actually really fun for me to kind of comb through the list and try to pick five of my favorites because, you know, I didn't use YoJo. I used this place called General's Joe's and went through their reviews. And
I have never heard of that place. Anyone else heard of that place?
No. And just kind of comparing figure to figure, it's just like, oh my God, there's so many figures here that are really, really awesome. That, I mean, something that none of us talked about, especially because, you know, I didn't really care for the Neo Vipers by and large, but the Crimson Neo Viper was actually a pretty neat figure, even though I don't really like the Neo Viper tooling a whole lot. Came with those little snakes. And,
yeah, they kind of tossed some different accessories at him. It had a big stick like and all the snakes and kind of a weird setup, but it worked. But,
like the shiny kind of red paint on him was really cool and just some really funky stuff.
He was
like,
hard to find for the longest time,
he
too.
He was, yeah. There's so many cool toys in the Rise of Cobra line that just don't get enough credit, which is too bad.
All right, so let's move on to our top vehicles from the line. None of mine are actually ones that were made specifically for Rise of Cobra. I just I liked some of the repaints more because a lot of them were pulling back molds that we hadn't seen since they originally came out during the real American Hero era of the 80s. So I was a big fan of the Walmart exclusive Outpost Defender, which had Roadblock and Tripwire. I never had that set as a kid, and I'm a big fan of the smaller kind of sets like that. I think that was pretty neat, even though those are really hard to find. I think I saw them in stores once, and then they were just gone out of all the Walmarts in the area. I like the Sky Sweeper jet with Air Raid. I thought that that was a nice way to redo the Fire Bat and the kind of Arctic colors, the lighter blue.
Yep.
And then they even added on the additional jets on the top, which is kind of nice. They didn't just repaint it and send it back out there. They actually did some new tooling for it, which is nice to see. And then I actually really like the Target exclusive mini vehicles, the Serpent armor, which was the snake armor. And it came with a Viper Commando, who was actually one of the better repaints of the Neo Viper.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember everyone just getting all excited over that, and then they peg-warmed?
Yeah,
I think that was another case of ordering way too much for Target, and then they just...
Yeah.
At the end, they were clearance down to very, very cheap.
Yeah. Then, like you said, with Walmart, if you didn't see those exclusives, those three sets exclusives, if you didn't pick them up the first time you saw them, you probably weren't going to get them again.
Mm-hmm.
So, unless you're me and you found them all on clearance for $7.
That's because no one shops at your Walmart up there.
That's true. That was the last time I ever saw G.I. Joe stuff at a local Walmart.
And that's it for me for vehicles. I think they, for what they had, because, I mean, there's only probably three or four, maybe five new molds, and the rest are repaints. I think they did a pretty good job with the repaints, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think they were really creative with it. You brought up a really good point with the Sky Sweeper / Fire Bat. That was a fantastic vehicle. I like that one a lot. It's probably one of my favorites. But, yeah, they took a mostly existing vehicle and added some little tweaks of tooling to it to kind of make it even cooler. I like that one a lot. In the interest of not overlapping your list, I went into the Walmart exclusive well as well and picked the Cobra Surveillance port with the Mars Officer and the Televiper. I'll come out right now and say the Mars Officer is horrible. I really hate that figure a bit. The helmet and the gimpy joints and stuff, ugh, it's ugly. But for some reason, I like that Televiper, even though it uses some of those same Neo Viper parts. I do like kind of the black and red. It's really kind of a striking, the way the colors kind of balance off each other is pretty striking, pretty cool. It's the same reason I like the Viper Commando like Greg does. I really like that black and red color contrast. But the surveillance port was, I mean, it was like the classic surveillance port, but it was all newly tooled. It looked all nice and shiny out of the package, and it was, I like that one a lot. And I also picked the Polar Shark sub with Ice Storm as well. I thought that was a really awesome vehicle, one of those that was unfortunately not released in huge numbers. Luckily, it did actually end up hitting retail in some form or fashion.
Well, it was an original vehicle. It wasn't something that was based upon something else.
Yep, and they made it just pretty much for the Joe movie. Gary brought up a good point with that underwater battle that kind of sucked. I'm right in that camp with him. I really wasn't a fan of that underwater battle in the movie, but at least we got more or less the two vehicles that fought each other in there with the Polar Shark sub and that Manta Ray Rattler versus Venom repaint. Kind of a chintzy way to do it, but hey, at least we got both vehicles. So yeah, those are kind of my two choices. The reason I picked those two specifically, again, was just an interest in not overlapping. I really loved the Serpent armor as well. I love the Sky Sweeper. You know, there's a bunch of stuff that I really liked that ended up on some other lists, so I kind of went with some stuff that wasn't there.
For my vehicles, number one, I had to put the Night Raven. That was actually, I think, like the first Rise of Cobra vehicle I bought. And I think I actually, outside of the Toys R Us exclusives, like the first Rise of Cobra item I bought. I've always been a fan of the Night Raven jet. I loved how they put in the little handle to control. That was the trigger mechanism to fire the missile. Basically, you were just pumping it with the cockpit. I just thought that was like really cool.
That was a cool play feature.
You had all the sounds and stuff. Number two, I had to go with the Sky Sweeper. That was just like incredible, and it was for a longest time really hard to find, so I was actually very glad that I was able to find one, and I loved it. It's just the way they took the bat and said, no, we can actually do this. And, you know, how often do you see like a one-seater G.I. Joe vehicle? Mm-hmm. G.I. Joe jet. And then for number three, I had put the Starsky and Hutch motorcycle.
The Snarler.
Yeah, I just thought that was cool. You know,
and it's an awesome vehicle.
The figures that came with it was just really nice, and I think it was a cool vehicle. You had the rocket launcher, the motorcycle, and it's like, you know, when you think of Joe motorcycles, you instantly think of the Ram, but, you know, there's other motorcycles out there for Joe, and I thought it was a really good effort.
I was going to say, it's a nice update to the Silver Mirage.
Agreed. Yeah.
And then, as everybody else has said, I got to give the honorable mention to the Target vehicle figure sets, because those were just cool, because, I mean, that went from 82 all the way up to, like, across the board in terms of, like, molding and sculpt.
Yep.
Okay, my top three. Number one, the Cobra gunship. I've already mentioned how impressive I thought its debut was on screen. But yeah, Cobra gunship, I mean, look, you could put three people on the inside. You had the pilot. It dropped bombs, shot missiles. What more do you want? And on movie screen, it just absolutely tore up this convoy and two Apache helicopters.
Yep.
Badass. The Steel Crusher Hummer. At first, I will admit, when I first saw that, and that was in a toy, I think it was in a Toy Fair magazine, back when they were still publishing Toy Fair, I'm like, the hell they do there? And like a design that was supposed to be for the Transformer movie, and it ended up just deciding not to make it transform and bring it over to Joe, and it didn't work for me at all until I saw the movie and I got this in hand. I'm like, oh, this actually works out. It's a sturdy toy. It doesn't feel chintzy, doesn't feel cheap. It has the play features that are pretty cool. It comes with the Motor Viper, which is another cool figure that's often overlooked. I really like the Steel Crusher. And then at number three, the Rock Slide Snowmobile, aside from my bias towards Snow Job, it's just an update to the Polar Battle Bear. Had an enclosed cockpit and everything. They had a prominent role in the movie where they rode him into the Cobra base at the top of the polar ice caps, and then Snake Eyes used the missile on one of them to shoot down one of the ICBMs. So again, I really liked the Rock Slide when that came out. So those are my top three. How about the worst ofs? Anybody have any worst ofs?
Well, I've got to give an honorable mention to pretty much every single Cobra Trooper that was produced. Besides the two Neo Vipers I mentioned, and I'm not talking the Elite Viper. The Elite Viper was cool. The Desert Viper was cool. But all of those Neo Vipers and Viper Commandos, I mean, their joints were just glitchy. Like, they always stood bow-legged. Those big, huge, bulky vests made it so they couldn't really move properly. Those masks were just weird. They were just all pretty bad. I didn't really have any love for any of those Neo Vipers or Viper Commanders.
Couldn't hold their weapons?
Yeah, couldn't hold their weapons. Just
they're basically number one on my worst list, is like every other Viper. Number two on my list, the Eels. Yeah, I really think a lot of the problems I had with the Troopers is that they were just so dark. They were like all black, all gray, and a lot of the detail to like their uniforms, their face mask, was just lost.
That's a good point with the Eel, because there's a lot of really great hidden detail in that figure, but you can't see it because it's all black.
And what was funny is if you got one of the Target exclusive packs, they had a Cobra Eel that was a 25th anniversary Eel that came with the little jet ski thing, and it was like a light years better figure. Number three, the Mars Trooper. I mean, everything that Justin said about it was like, you know, just no.
Yep.
Number four, Cobra Commander. I just, the clear mask, like the open trench coat, it's like he looks like a flasher, but only a techno organic flasher.
Look at my cybernetic chest.
And then number five, the version one Baroness. She just didn't look right. The Paris Pursuit version was better, and that was only because she came with a bunch of guns and stuff. But just, that was...
Oh, I almost mentioned her in my best of set, the Paris Pursuit Baroness. I liked that. I really loved that flowing trench coat, and her head sculpt was really good, and like you said, she came with all those cool guns. But
And that little timer thing for the...
Yeah, that was a pretty cool figure. But you're right, the first version was kind of horrible.
Yeah, you put those side by side and it'll make you cringe.
You can really see the evolution. I mean, talking about how kind of design has grown over the years, you can look at, like you said, Series 1 Rise of Cobra figures and Series 3 Rise of Cobra figures, and there is a distinct difference between them. Even like with General Hawk, you look at the General Hawk that came with the Pit and the General Hawk that you got in Wave 3 Collection 2 or whatever the hell it was, and it's just light years different. Just the quality of the sculpt, the tightness of the sculpt, just how well they were designed and built, it's night and day.
Well, if you remember that very first Baroness, that was out in Asia for a long time prior to anything.
It was.
And I don't know if that's the one that they were kind of using to be their test for likenesses and whatnot, but I remember that for the longest time you could get that figure early from Asia, and that was it.
Yeah, and she had that like stupid platform thing that if you didn't see the movie, you had no idea it could attach to the gunship.
That's right. I forgot about that.
What was that? Yeah.
I'm looking through the list. There's some that are not the best, but I'm going to go with the Walmart exclusive 2-pack of Gung-Ho. I'm calling it and saying that figure sucks.
Does suck. I'm with you on that one. Yeah.
I still am waiting for a good Gung-Ho figure. Someday, please. Please.
I don't get it. Why not? I mean, geez, he's a pretty quality character, and he's been totally forgotten, it seems like. I really don't understand.
The nice thing with those sets, though, is they came with the Cobra and G.I. Joe stickers, and they also had the temporary tattoos, so that was kind of nice.
Yep. For me, the worst figure, that's probably anger Gary Head a little bit, but the Volcano Viper. In terms terms of looking Jules Verne like something from, you know, 20,000 Leagues, I mean, that was good. I mean, it was, but going back to what Justin says, I mean, you couldn't pose it. To put a weapon in its hand, to quote Chuck, is near impossible.
Yep.
Which is, you know, there's Ding 1, Ding 2. It's a great-looking figure, and then it's of course, spawned its way over into the 30th as the Hazard Viper. But I don't even think you could really have it sit comfortably in the mole pod, to be honest with you.
No, it doesn't even fit, really.
Yeah, it was a bummer. It looks good. I mean, from a classic science fiction Jules Verne point of view, it looks good. But from anything else, it just... Really, it's just a 3¾ statue. So, the worst vehicle, anything of the Rip Attack.
Good call.
Everyone forgot about those. Yeah. You know, I remember, and there's a reason why the second wave got canceled, because the first wave sucked. I mean, the figures, I think, were the things that people really wanted out of them, and they weren't really that sought after in terms of being anything special. I think it's just completist wanted to get the hands on the figure versus actually wanting to buy the vehicle. So
yeah, that's what bugged me about, I mean, that G.I. Joe Rip Attack vehicle really bugged me, because the Snake Eyes that came with it was actually almost the most kind of movie-accurate Snake Eyes. He had a mixture of the Paris Pursuit parts and the Version 1 parts, and he actually ended up being the one that was kind of closest to how he appeared in the movie, but he had to buy that crappy Rip Attack vehicle to get him. But luckily, they clearanced those things like $3 a pop, and I was able to get it for pretty cheap. But
you had mentioned the Mole Pod. That thing deserves number one worst vehicle ever.
I can't believe they released 3 of them in the Rise of Cro-. That's just obscene. That should be a criminal.
I disliked it in the movie. I disliked the vehicle itself, and I hope we never see anything like that again.
Exactly.
Did the drill even rotate at all?
No, it was like a big chunk of movable plastic.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's a freaking drill. I mean, have an action feature. Roll on the ground and spin. I mean, that would have made it like a lot.
I thought the drill bit did
better.
Rotate. The drill bit actually spin?
I didn't think so, because a missile like stuck into the very tip of it, and I don't think the drill spun. Maybe I'm wrong.
I thought the drill bit spun.
Maybe it's
Everyone's scrambling for Yojo right now to find out.
I don't really care enough to scramble.
Nah, it's not a big deal.
But no, I didn't. I might be wrong on that, but I did not think it spun. I just thought it was a big, huge hunk of immobile plastic. It didn't even have any guns. It just had that little stupid missile on the front. And this is coming from a massive G.I. Joe apologist.
Hasbro apologist.
That's true.
And you can excuse it having guns, not having guns, because really, all it was like a transport for troops to get into some place that they had to burrow into. But even then, you could only hold one figure.
Yeah. Okay, Gary, you're right. There's a little rotating thing on the front, I think.
Yay, Gary's right.
Mark your calendars. Right. All right. You're right, I'm wrong. Still sucks.
There's a soundbite that I'm going to hold on to right
now. Yeah.
Now we're going to talk about the license stuff, because as you know, with a big movie, you have the various licensed properties. And I'm just curious. I know, does anybody have any of the license stuff, or was I the only one who got to dip?
I got some of it, just because walking into a store and seeing a Snake Eyes t-shirt or, you know, a G.I. Joe hat is a kind of a cool feeling. I got some of that stuff. Not much. I think the thing that I really kind of went out of my way to get, which was probably a little crazy, is 7-Up had those Slurpee cups. And
what was it called? Something artillery.
Yeah, I don't remember.
It wasn't that bad.
But no, those, they were cool.
Yeah, I remember.
And, like, rotated the cups, like the characters on the move. They had that like lenticular surface. You saw like Storm Shadow jump over the railing, and it was kind of neat. I mean, I live in a rural area. I don't have a 7-Eleven within 60 miles of me. So
liquid artillery. Well, and I'm in the same boat. There's only of the city the size of Indianapolis. There's only 3 7-Elevens.
Wow.
And every single one of them is in let's put it this way, a questionable neighborhood. So having to find an excuse to get down there to buy yourself a liquid artillery and a new cup was often a little bit difficult. Yep. But of that, they had the steel coffee cups, which I actually have at my desk.
I never could find one. That was another thing I was really trying to look for, too, at the same time, was that, yeah, I guess could get one of those cappuccinos with that steel coffee cup, and I never was able to find
it. Yeah, that was pretty nice.
Well, for mine, it was I actually went a little big, and I got the made by United Cutlery. It is the official replica of the katana used by Snake Eyes.
It's the official Rescue Greg from Canada sword.
Yes. This is like the official. This is the katana that, you know, has appeared several times in the show. Yes, it wasn't just a prop. I actually do have one. It was I got it from BBTS. It comes in a very nice box with some rice
cover. Did you clean all the poutine off it?
What was that?
Did you clean all the poutine off it?
Yes, I did. There does come with some form of like certificate of authenticity. I mean, it's nothing like official. It just says made by United Cutlery, and there's a picture of Ray Park as Snake Eyes holding the sword.
Yep, it's a knife.
It comes in a very nice, I think I want to say, not vel- like a velvet type of a bag. It's not even a, that, you know, ties shut, and the sheath is made of wood, and interesting note, the blade is not sharpened. You know, due to laws and what have you, traveling in the United States, you can't have sharpened blades. I mean, some places do sell them, some don't, but what I found interesting is that it did have, like an oily type of finish to it, like you've just sharpened it and oiled the blade. Good balance to it. That's something very important when it comes to swords.
Spoken like a sword expert.
Ninja. Well, no, you want the weight of the sword to really be more forward with the blade, so in terms of when striking and slicing. But it was really cool. I was able to get it at a really decent price because, you know, these weren't moving at all. So, that was it. Unfortunately, it didn't come with a stand or anything. It just came as it was. So I guess that's what how BBTS was selling it. But they also have available a Storm Shadow katana, which has looks more like a traditional katana with the wrapped handle and what have you. But yeah, it was really cool.
My favorite licensed item was the video game. The soundtrack, the video game. When, like you, Justin, when Debbie was in the store, she would come home with Rise Cobra stickers that she would found, or the kid bathtub sets, or the things to hold your toothbrush. I mean, I told her, I said, I don't care what it is, because you never know if the movie doesn't do well and this thing fails and Joe decides to go back on another H-word. you just want to buy everything you absolutely can. So we pretty much went hog wild on the licensed stuff, but I look forward to that in the next movie. Yeah, that's kind of the fun of the next movie is what interesting licensed stuff that you can see. I did like a lot of the cross promotions they did with some of the Fortune 500 and some of the larger companies. Like they did a crossover or cross promo with Royal Purple, which is that's what Scarlett had splashed on her when she was fighting the Baroness. Symantec.
I had a feeling you were going to mention that one. Yeah,
and Cisco actually had some product placement in the movie too, so it's pretty cool. Yeah.
They had that presence, that video conference.
Yep.
Is that real?
What's that? The three-dimensional hologram? No, that's not real. But
Greg, absolutely.
We don't have that yet.
That's how us Cisco pros have our live meetings. We do the 3D hologram.
So. 3D hologram, and I get to walk through your hologram when I don't like you.
We have WebEx. I wouldn't know.
Yeah, the Rise of Cobra gets a bad rap. It does deserve its share of the blame and its share of what it kind of did to the brand. I really, it's kind of funny. It's a weird dichotomy because in engineering and design, I think it extended the brand quite a bit. It gave it new life for the Pursuit of Cobra and 30th anniversary. But in a public kind of perception, it threw it back at least 5 or 10 years. I mean, it really hurt it in the public eye and in retail's eye, which is ironic because it ended up really furthering the design elements of the toys. So it kind of went in both directions. You know, we as collectors, we have a lot to thank it for what it did for the Pursuit of Cobra line and stuff like that. But as being able to find it in retail stores, we have a lot to be upset about because
its
failure at retail kicked G.I. Joe back and kind of hurt the brand a little bit.
100%, you said it.
We got to give a shout out to G.I. Joe Retaliation, though. We're talking about the G.I. Joe movie, and at this point right now, I think John Chu tweeted, we're recording this on, Wednesday night, and John Chu tweeted, probably about an hour or two ago, that G.I. Joe Retaliation trailer just surpassed 4 million views on YouTube.
That's interesting, because it was 3 million earlier today, so that's awesome.
It's the number one viewed video on YouTube right now, which is amazing. I can't remember the last time G.I. Joe was number one at anything, so that's really cool. Very cool.
Yeah, one sec. I was trying to find how many views the Rise of Cobra trailer had.
Okay, oh, God, that'd be a cool comparison, considering it's been out for 2 years.
Yeah, none of them on here have more than 3 million.
Wow, that's amazing.
So all your hard work yesterday, Justin, paid off.
That was all me, baby. That was all me.
Well, that does it for this special edition, Rise of Cobra Retrospective. You can talk to us at whatsonjoemind at gmail.com. Call or text us at 262-515-WOJM. Read about us on Facebook at facebook.com/whatsonjoemind. On Facebook, you'll find our link to Podbean's site, where you'll find all the links to our social networking profiles, active forum threads, such as Joe Declassified and the G.I. Joe Collectors Club. Download our show to iTunes or at InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it for free in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio and What's On Joe Mind, we're the smarter way to listen to radio. Check out GeekCastRadio.com for other great flagship podcast shows such as Movie Week in Review, TuneCast Beyond, and Telecast. Find them all at GeekCastRadio.com and unleash the geek in you today. Please check out our other special editions featuring the 2011 Canadian Joe Convention, the Pursuit of Cobra Retrospective, SK Omega, and the 2012 JoeCon site announcement and FAQ. You can find those all on our page at whatsonjoemind.podbean.com. So, for our showrunner Greg, our co-host Justin and Chuck, I'm Gary, saying to all our men and women serving, God bless, Godspeed, and come home safe. Good night, folks, and thanks for listening to this Rise of Cobra special edition of What's on Joe Mind. See ya!
See ya!
Good night.